Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America, designed for people like you who are learning American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz in Washington. Every day of the year on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. Because this program is produced for learners of American English, like you, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words and phrases that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. This is what you will hear on today's program. In our weekly higher education report, correspondent Pete Musto will tell us about students who are the first in their family to attend college. He found that they have a different experience than students with college graduate parents. Then you will hear words and their stories, one of our most popular programs. This week, Ana Mateo tells us about a 1,000-year-old word, just in time for Halloween. And finally, we will present The Making of a Nation. Today, we will take you back to December 1941, when the United States declared war against Japan after Japanese planes attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. A few days later, Germany and Italy declared war against the United States. So, you can see, as always, we have a lot for you today. So, let's get started. Here's higher education correspondent Pete Musto.
Students who are the first in their family to attend college have a different experience than students with college graduate parents. Young people today do have many resources available to them. Books and websites offer advice on getting accepted into a school and dealing with life away from home for the first time. Also, most high schools in the United States have counselors and college advisors. Their job is to help students understand the process of applying to schools. The Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce is an organization that studies the link between education and career success. Research from the organization suggests almost 32% of undergraduate students in the U.S. are first generation. The research also suggests first generation students have a much more difficult college experience than those whose parents hold degrees. Researchers found only about 40% of first-generation students completed a degree or certificate program after 6 years of study. About 55% of students with degree-holding parents completed their programs in the same amount of time. Maria Urena is a college advisor with the College Success Foundation. Her organization works to improve college graduation rates among first-generation students and other minority groups. Urena notes that not all first-generation college students are the same. They may be from high or low-income families. They may have been born in the U.S. or a foreign country. Urena works with students at A.C. Davis High School in the northwestern state of Washington. About 80% of the students there live in poverty, she says. Also, 49 out of the 50 students in her program have parents who never completed high school. Most of these students also have had to deal with traumatic experiences in their lives, Urena adds. This includes family members dying or going to prison. Also, families often need older children to work to provide extra income. Many of her students believe there is no chance they will ever go to college, she says. And those who do make the choice to seek higher education do not know what it requires.
A lot of times students don't even know where to begin the process, like what kind of questions they need to be asking.
That is why Urena meets regularly with both students and parents to discuss their goals and how to reach them. She brings community members in to help students with their application materials. The library at A.C. Davis High School stays open late so students can do things like apply for financial aid in their free time. Nicole Smith agrees that first-generation students need the extra help with the many steps in the application process. Smith is the chief economist at the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce. She says colleges should ensure all the information they provide to interested young people is easier to understand. But she adds that barriers for students are not completely removed once a college accepts them. First-generation students often feel like they do not belong. They also feel greater stress and pressure to succeed, which can cause problems for them, she says.
When you ask them, what are some of your biggest challenges and some of your greatest fears, they have a great fear of failure, because they feel if they fail, they not only fail themselves, they fail their parents, they fail their children or their potential children if they don't have children yet, they fail their other relatives.
Smith suggests that colleges and universities should do more to measure the progress of first-generation students. In that way, the dream of a college education can come true for them and hopefully their children as well. I'm Pete Musto.
Thanks, Pete. Now, here's Anna Mateo with a special Halloween edition of Words and Their Stories.
From VOA Learning English, this is Words and Their Stories. On this program, we talk about the origins and usage of common expressions in American English. With Halloween just around the corner, today we explore the haunted world of ghosts. The Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary says, "The word ghost goes back 1,000 years." To the earliest recorded evidence of the language. The first meaning of ghost was the seat of life or intelligence, and it still has that meaning in some expressions. However, today, the word ghost usually means the soul of a dead person. This meaning is based on the idea that a person's spirit and body are separate. The spirit can continue existing long after the body has died. An older spelling of ghost is G-A-S-T. Gast, spelled with an H, is the root of words like aghast, meaning struck with terror or shock, and ghastly, meaning very frightening. For example, I was aghast at her ghastly appearance. The German word for ghost is Geist. Two common words in American English that end in Geist are poltergeist and zeitgeist. Poltergeist is a ghost that makes strange noises and causes objects to move. It is also the title of a 1982 film, remade in 2015. The movie Poltergeist often makes it on the scariest movies of all time lists. And all you have to say is, "They're here," for people to know what movie you are talking about. Zeitgeist means the spirit of the age or spirit of the time. It is the leading set of ideals or beliefs that cause people to act during a certain time. For example, you could say that the songs of singer-songwriter Woody Guthrie captured the zeitgeist of 1960s America. As we said at the top of the program, Halloween is just around the corner. During Halloween, kids dressed as ghosts are common sights. The costume is very simple. Just throw on a white cloth that covers you from head to foot. But do not expect to win any costume competitions. You would not have a ghost of a chance. People use this expression to mean that something is very unlikely to happen. Another popular ghost expression is, "You look like you've seen a ghost." We say this when people look frightened or shocked. After all, a ghost is dead, so it might be an unpleasant surprise to see one. The sight might even make you turn pale as a ghost. This is used when people lose color in their face. Sometimes this happens when a person is scared. But a bad cold or flu can also turn you as pale as a ghost. I am Anna Mateo, officially saying to all of you, goodbye.
Thanks, Anna. Now, we present The Making of a Nation. In December 1941, the United States was at war. It declared war against Japan after Japanese planes attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. A few days later, Germany and Italy declared war against the United States.
President Franklin Roosevelt quickly decided that America could not fight major campaigns in the Pacific and in Europe at the same time. He and his advisors decided to fight first against the Germans and Italians. Then, when victory in Europe seemed sure, the United States could turn to fight the Japanese in Asia. This left the Japanese free to extend their power throughout Asia and the Western Pacific. Soon after the attack at Hawaii, Japanese forces invaded Hong Kong, Malaya, and the Philippines. American forces in the Philippines suffered heavy losses, and Manila fell to Japanese troops. In February 1942, Japan's forces won a great victory against the British in Singapore. Japanese forces marched into Burma. They attacked Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, and captured the Andaman Islands in the Bay of Bengal. The Japanese military forces seemed too strong to stop. President Roosevelt sent some forces to the Pacific, and he began to rebuild the American naval forces destroyed at Pearl Harbor. But he sent most of America's military strength to Europe. The United States rushed troops and war equipment to help Britain survive against Adolf Hitler's Germany. American military leaders wanted to fight Germany quickly by launching an attack across the English Channel. But British Prime Minister Winston Churchill opposed this. He and others feared such an invasion might fail. So British and American forces attacked Italian and German occupation troops in North Africa. They defeated them and then crossed the Mediterranean Sea to attack enemy forces in Sicily. Within weeks, they pushed the Germans out of Sicily to the Italian mainland. The Allied invasion of Italy followed. Hitler could not strengthen his forces in North Africa and Italy because Germany also was fighting hard in the Soviet Union. Hitler's decision early in the war to attack the Soviet Union was a serious mistake. It divided his men and materials. His plan was to defeat Soviet forces quickly with one strong attack. But he failed, and his failure cost him valuable troops and supplies that might have helped him win the battles for North Africa and Italy. Germany's attack on the Soviet Union began with great success. In the middle of 1941, a German force of more than 3 million men invaded the Soviet Union. It captured the Ukraine, took control of Kiev, and marched deep into Russia. The situation changed the following year. Soviet forces under Marshal Georgi Zhukov won a fierce battle for the city of Stalingrad, now Volgograd. A great many German soldiers died from cold and hunger during the bitter winter months that followed. Zhukov's forces attacked the German troops and pushed back the invaders. Other Soviet troops forced the Germans away from the city of Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. By the middle of 1944, German forces throughout the Soviet Union were retreating, and Soviet forces were preparing to push them over the border and invade Germany themselves. The fighting came at a terrible cost. Huge numbers of soldiers and civilians were killed. The fighting in World War II was not limited to land. Battles were also being fought on the sea. The main goal of the German Navy during the war was to prevent the United States from sending ships to Britain with war materials, food, and troops. At first, the Germans were very successful. There was hunger in Britain in 1941 because so few ships could cross the North Atlantic with food. German submarines were the greatest danger to ships crossing the Atlantic. These U-boats, as the Germans called them, could hide below the surface and attack without warning. The threat from German submarines did not ease until new technology was developed in 1943. Allied scientists improved sonar and radar systems that helped find submarines on the surface and underwater. More of the enemy submarines were found and destroyed. The Allies slowly gained control of the Atlantic. Allied and German warships fought a number of traditional naval battles, but airplanes came to play an increasingly important part in the fighting at sea. British ships, with the help of planes launched from an aircraft carrier, destroyed a powerful German battleship, the Bismarck, on May 27, 1941. The most famous air battle of the war in Europe took place during the summer and autumn of the previous year. It was known as the Battle of Britain. It got its name from a speech to Parliament by Prime Minister Churchill following the evacuation of British and French forces from Dunkirk.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the news. In the House of Commons this afternoon, the Prime Minister, Mr. Churchill, said, "What General Vagar called the Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is about to begin."
It was the most extensive aerial bombing yet in the war. It was also the first battle to be fought entirely in the air. German Stuka dive bombers attacked shipping centers, areas of political importance, airfields, and airplane factories. Luftwaffe pilots in their Messerschmitts battled the Hurricanes and Spitfires of the Royal Air Force. While the flying skills of the German and British pilots were well matched, it was ultimately the greater maneuverability of the British Spitfire that won the long months of battle over the English Channel. The British victory in the air helped prevent Operation Sea Lion, a planned German invasion of Britain. In May of 1942, Britain's Royal Air Force carried out an attack on Germany with 1,000 bombers. It was just the first of many bombing runs over Germany and German-occupied areas by the air forces of Britain and the United States. The planes bombed German military and industrial centers. They also bombed civilian targets in an effort to demonstrate to the German people the price of Germany's aggression. The German cities of Cologne, Dresden, and Hamburg suffered widespread destruction. The Allied bombing attacks continued until the war's end in 1945. Hitler's victories in the early months of the war had struck fear into the hearts of people throughout the world. Hitler and his Axis allies had won battle after battle. They had captured most of Western Europe and invaded the Soviet Union. They had seized North Africa, and their submarines controlled the Atlantic. Germany continued to seem strong during the first months after the United States entered the war in Europe. But the situation began to change. German strength and control were greatest in November of 1942. After then, the mighty German military machine began to slow down. Germany and its Axis partner, Italy, suffered serious losses in the first 6 months of 1943. German losses were extremely heavy in the Soviet Union. 160,000 German troops died at Stalingrad, and more than 110,000 surrendered. American and British forces captured 250,000 German and Italian troops in North Africa. Many more thousands were killed or captured in Sicily and the Italian mainland. German submarines were being destroyed in the North Atlantic, allowing more Allied troops and supplies to reach Britain. By the end of 1943, Hitler and his armies no longer seemed so strong. But German forces continued to occupy France, Belgium, and much of the rest of Western Europe. Now the time had come for the Allies to invade German-held Europe from Britain. Allied forces planned the greatest military invasion in history to break the German control of Europe and win the war.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching.
That invasion, the famous D-Day landing on the beaches of Normandy, will be our story tomorrow, here on Learning English. A reminder, we now bring you The Making of a Nation on Sundays and Mondays on this program. This Making of a Nation program was written by David Jermul. It was presented and produced by Steve Ember, and we thank them both. You can find the entire Making of a Nation series online with transcripts, MP3s, and images at learningenglish.voanews.com. While you are visiting our website, you can also read and listen to longer versions of the stories that you have just heard on this program. You can also read, listen to, and download our other programs. And you will find captioned videos and lessons to test your American English skills. We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also send us a message through our website. Please know that however you reach us, we do read every message you send. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. And be sure to listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time, every day of the year. Well, that's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.